Well, I know those law books mean a lot to you, but not out here. Out here, a man settles his own problems.
Ladies and gentlemen, August Donnelly.
As that fine lady said, I am August Donnelly, and you're tuned in to Full Frontal on CHRW 94.9 FM. I bid you all a good day or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are. Folks, she's still here, she's still near, and I think at this point it's safe to say she'll be with us going forward, barring unforeseen events. Without further delay, the Medina from Regina, the Full Frontal intern, Barb. Barb, how the F are you?
I'm doing pretty well, and I gotta say that was a pretty generous introduction.
Well, I do my best to take care of my peeps. Barb, I've got an interesting interview all queued up this week. I think folks are going to learn a thing or six.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was up in Lucan, Ontario recently, just due north of London. If you take Richmond Street, turns into Highway 4, and it's about a 15-minute drive north for those that aren't familiar. Lucan's a great little Irish community. Well, Irish for the most part, but not entirely Irish anymore. Anyway, for those that know their history, it is the home and site of the infamous Donnelly Massacre, the so-called Black Donnelly family of Lucan Biddulph.
It's an important local story if you don't know what it's all about.
That's absolutely right, Barb. For those of you that are interested in maybe reading a little bit more about it, go to my official website, www.augustdonnelly.com. There's a link that says The Grind. Click on that. That's my online blog, forum, journal, whatever you want to call it. And a few months back, I wrote an article entitled Deriding the Donnellys, and that gives you sort of a brief overview in, you know, 1,000 words or less of what the Donnelly story is really all about. So while I was in Lucan, I had a chance to meet up with Marg Paul. Marg is the current president of Lucan Area Heritage. It's a not-for-profit organization formed back in 1995, so they're going on 13, 14 years now. They're doing well for themselves, and they're devoted, of course, to proliferating the historical aspects of the Lucan area. A lot of people don't know that Lucan was home to the Wilberforce Settlement, which was a major part of the Canadian arm of the Underground Railroad, bringing a lot of black slaves from the south to freedom in Canada, as well, of course, as being home to the infamous Donnelly Massacre on February the 4th of 1880, when 5 members of the Donnelly family were massacred. And that's, you know, as Barb said, a very integral part of our local history. So we'll get to that interview in the latter half of the show. How does that sound, Barb?
Sounds good.
Okay, let's get down to the current state of affairs. I've got papers all over my desk. I'm rustling away here, as you can hear, as usual. I've got jots and tittles everywhere. A funny story in the news right now that a friend of mine, good friend of mine, and a good man in general, Dan McClellan over at the Chum TV A channel, is a story he brought to light recently about hiding cigarettes. Well, apparently now in stores, retail stores, whether it's independently owned variety stores or franchises, you know, what have you, there's a new legislation which has passed but not yet taken effect whereby vendors will be obligated to hide cigarettes and tobacco products behind a cover or curtain, is what the piece of legislation cites, which of course made me immediately think of The Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the tobacco behind the curtain. It's ridiculous. It's silly. I mean, it makes me think also of when you're a kid going to the video store back in the days of VHS and Betamax. You know, you're going to going to rent a movie with mom, but out of the corner of your eye, you know, you see the room that's cordoned off in the back corner with the velvet curtain or the, you know, saloon type swinging doors. It's the porn room is what it is. It's the adult video room. Everybody knows what it is. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't there. It's like ostrich syndrome. Because I stick my head in the sand and I can't see you doesn't mean you can't see me. People are still going to know tobacco is there. People are still going to smoke. I mean, what did Prohibition do for alcohol? Well, it made a lot of gangsters multimillionaires in an era when being a millionaire was like being a billionaire, because it allowed them to open speakeasies and run illegal liquor for years.
I would agree with you, but just to play devil's advocate for a moment.
As you so often do.
Well, that's why I'm here. Well, I would agree with you that people who are going to smoke whether or not they can see the cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not going to stop those people from smoking. However, people that are on the fence about smoking, like people that are trying to quit, or perhaps a young person that's maybe thinking about starting but not too sure, For those people, I think hiding the cigarettes behind a cover might help. It might stop the temptation. It's like that whole seafood diet. You know, you see food, you eat it. It's the same idea with the cigarettes, right? If you're on the fence about smoking and you don't see them, they might not come into your mind, and you might be able to pass through that variety store without picking up a pack. So, yes, I agree with you. It's not going to stop people that do smoke regularly, but on the fence, it might help.
Yeah, and you know what? I think you raise a valid point there, Barb, and I think anything that's a motion towards living a cleaner, healthier life is obviously beneficial, despite the fact that it may seem a little bit inane in its nature. So I guess we'll leave that one open to debate. You know, the yay-sayers and the naysayers can feel free to do what I always advise people to do. You know, you can shoot me an email, august@chrwradio.com. Tell me what you think. I'll read it on the air. I will critique it myself. I will either laugh with you or laugh at you. And that's my right, because this is my show. You know, another thing that came to light recently, and this is actually courtesy of our good friend Barb here, the intern here at Full Frontal. I was checking my email recently, and Barb sent me a rather funny article. It was from the online classifieds Kijiji. I'm sure people are familiar with Kijiji. It's an online classified ad system whereby people can place ads, you know, for things they want to buy, things they want to sell. There's even a rather humorous section entitled Missed Connections. It's part of their personal ad section, which is a pretty amusing way to pass a few minutes if you've got some time to kill during your day.
We've obviously got too much free time on our hands.
Barb can speak for herself. She's just bitter that despite her numerous missed connections, she's still looking. The ad in question, though, as I said, I have to give credit to Barb on this one. It's an ad under the category of pets and dogs/puppies for sale. Wanted is, I would like a small dog. Price, $150. So I would presume this individual wishes to pay in the neighborhood of $150 or less for a small dog. Their posting lists as follows. All lowercase letters, incorrect grammar, spelling, punctuation, etc. But anyway, the listing reads, I am looking for a small dog. I, cause my other dog is going to kick the bucket soon.
What exactly is a bucket?
Barb, I'm not entirely sure, but I presume that bucket was supposed to be bucket, but I'm not entirely sure how one could pass off B-U-G-E-T as a typo for B-U-C-K-E-T.
I feel really bad if the person that wrote this is listening to the show right now.
You know what? I don't. This is my show, and I will laugh with you or laugh at you, as previously stated.
We mostly do laughing at.
Yes, yes, we do. But in all seriousness and in all sincerity, would you really want to give a living creature to a person who says they're looking for a small dog because their other, spelled O-U-T-H-E-R, dog is going to kick the bucket soon? I think it's quite possible that this individual has a lower IQ than the dog they might be obtaining. So it'd be a classic scenario of who's walking who.
Well, and I'm just wondering if the person that wrote this ad is even capable of taking care of another life.
Put it this way, I wouldn't sell them a plant, let alone a dog. However, this is the world we live in. I shake my head on a daily basis. You know what? And actually, in relation to stupidity, this is something else that happened recently, and Barb, you should have seen this.
What's that?
Well, I was at the drugstore, and I had to get a prescription. As you know, I've got very, very bad seasonal allergies. People may be able to tell I sound a little bit nasal right now, and that's because they haven't quite taken effect yet, the antihistamines, the prescription antihistamines. Anyway, up until a couple of years ago, I literally, folks, did not have an allergy. Penicillin only. Since a baby, I've been allergic to penicillin. But never did I have a seasonal allergy. Ragweed, grass, pollen, dogs, dander, cat dander, goose dander, you know, anything like that. Nothing like that bothered me. So I always thought it was like an old wives' tale that you can develop allergies as you move on through life. But apparently it's not. This is, you know, the Almighty playing a cruel trick on me and teaching me a lesson, I suppose. This will be the third summer I've had these allergies. And they're brutal. Like, they're absolutely terrible. I get it to the point where I get the conjunctivitis, like the eyes crusted shut. Like, it's nasty if I don't take the prescription antihistamines.
August?
Yes?
Do you want me to go now or later to pick up the tiny violin for you?
The
Maybe I should do it after the show.
I can fire you as quickly as I hired you. How does that sound? Anyway, so there I am, standing at the pharmacy counter, and there was a new pharmacy technician working. You know, pretty young girl, seemed affable enough. However, you know, not the most tactful individual I've ever encountered. Apparently, my drug plan information was out of date, what they had on file, because she brought me my prescription, and it was like something crazy, like $78, when I usually pay like, you know, $6, thank God for drug coverage. So she hands me this piece of paper and the receipt or whatever, and she says, $78.50, we'll say. I go, you know, what? No. that was actually my literal response was, no. No, it won't be $78 and change when it should be one-tenth of that. So she goes, oh, well, your coverage has expired. So it hadn't actually expired. I had gotten a new updated card that I hadn't, you know, given them the serial number or whatever off of, blah, blah, blah. So I go, oh, sorry, here's my new information. So the girl takes my information card and walks over to a computer terminal approximately 15 to 20 feet from where I'm standing and starts to enter in my new information. At this point, I will make it known that there was a queue of approximately 5 or 6 people standing behind me of various ages, genders, ethnicities, etc. The girl then proceeds in her outdoor voice to confirm my name, my birth date, my address, my home phone number, and then, if you can believe it, ladies and gentlemen, this is the God's honest truth, may God strike me dead if I am telling a lie right now, she then confirmed the type of medication and dosage, again, in her outdoor voice.
Thank God you're only getting allergy medicine.
That's what I was just going to say. Thank God I wasn't getting something embarrassing. You know, for something pertaining to the urogenital tract or the old back door. I mean, that would be genuinely embarrassing. So after the girl had verified all of this personal information in her outdoor voice in front of several complete strangers, I responded, yes, and I suppose it's a fairly good thing I wasn't being prescribed anything embarrassing. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So I say to the pharmacy technician with the booming voice, if you're listening and you know who you are, less is more. Less is more.
Shh.
Exactly. My God, I can only imagine, get a few drinks of the poor girl and put her into a loud pub. She'd be a boisterous little thing, she would.
You really are Irish, aren't you?
To be sure. Yeah, so that was another goofy thing that happened of late. So, Barb, before we get too caught up and run away with the show here, like I mentioned, I do have a great interview all lined up here. I've got Marg Paul from the Lucan Area Heritage Society ready to tell us all about the upcoming plans for the Donnelly Museum and other events and items of interest that Lucan Area Heritage is currently involved with. So what do you say? Shall we give it a listen?
Let's give it a listen.
Here we go. I'm on site in Lucan, Ontario, with Marg Paul, the current president of Lucan Area Heritage and the Donnelly Museum. Marg, thanks very much for making some time for the show today.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad that you came out. We have lots of exciting things going on here in Lucan.
It seems so. Now, Lucan right now is a town of, what, about 2,000 or 3,000 people, something like that?
I think it's about 2,000.
So not a very big town. Now, during the time of the Donnelly family, as I mentioned earlier in my broadcast, this was approximately 3,000 or 4,000 people at that time, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Back when the Donnellys were here, yes.
Also joining Marg and I today is Kathleen, and you're a summer student working with Lucan Area Heritage?
Yes, I am.
And where are you attending school at the moment?
Well, I'm just finished my first year of social service worker, and I've been going to school in Timmins.
So you're not local, so to speak, as far as your education goes?
No, although I grew up just north of Lucan.
Okay, so you're fairly familiar with the Donnelly story yourself?
Yes, I am.
What could you tell the folks then about the events? I mean, the Donnellys arrived from Tipperary, you know, in the early 1840s, set up land on the Roman line. And what could you tell the listeners as far as kind of a, I know it's a lengthy story, but a brief overview of the events leading up to, you know, the massacre in February of 1880?
Well, one of the things that started people having trouble with the Donnellys is that when James and Joanna first moved to Lucan, they settled on land that didn't belong to them. It belonged to a man named John Grace, and they had an agreement with him that they would work the land, but that they wouldn't pay rent, but then he sold the land to somebody else. That person tried to get them to leave. They went to court over it. The farm was 100 acres, and the judge awarded half of the 100 acres to the Donnelly family and half to the Farrells. And that's what started it. Sometime after that, James Donnelly Sr. and Patrick Farrell wound up in the same area. They were working together to build a barn for someone else. They were drinking, they got in a fight, and James Donnelly killed Patrick Farrell. He hid for about a year, staying at his friends' houses. Sometimes he would dress in his wife's clothes so that he could work the fields. But eventually he gave himself up. He was sentenced to hang. But when Joanna took up a petition and local people signed it, it was changed to 7 years in prison. And at the time, the Donnellys had 8 children, 7 boys, and their youngest was a daughter. They spent 7 years without their father. When he returned, the Donnellys were blamed for quite a lot if stuff happened. Some of the things they did, some they didn't. And finally, in February 1880, they were blamed for burning down a neighbor's barn, the Ryder's barn. And they were to go to court. Originally, the sons were accused of it, but they had been at a wedding, so they had a solid alibi, so they blamed the parents. James and Joanna were to go to court on February 4th, but there was no evidence against them, and it was sure that the case would be thrown out, and they would have been able to sue for libel against the others. And while this was going on, there was a group started growing up in Lucan in the area called the Bedolph Peace Society. They became the Vigilance Society. They decided they were going to deal with the Donnellys once and for all. They met at the Cedar Swamp Schoolhouse on February 4th, 1880, and they decided to go out. They were going to the log cabin. So around the middle of the night, they went to the cabin, and first James Carroll, the local police officer, came in. Tom Donnelly was sleeping in the back room, and James Carroll went in. He handcuffed him while he was still asleep. That, of course, woke Tom up. And his parents, who were sleeping in other rooms, heard Tom. First, his mother, Joanna, got up. She saw that there were people there. She woke up her niece, from Bridget, who was visiting from Ireland. And Bridget started lighting a fire and so that they could see what was going on. James Donnelly Sr., he was sleeping in another bedroom with a young boy who had come to take care of their farm while they were away at court, whose name was Johnny O'Connor. James Donnelly also got up, but Johnny O'Connor stayed in the room. And when all the family was together in the one room, the police constable let out a yell, and a large group of the vigilantes, it was believed there's 30 to 40 of them, came in. They began to beat the family. When Bridget saw this, she ran upstairs. Johnny O'Connor saw it. He climbed underneath the bed and hid behind a dirty laundry basket. And that he's the only one who survived, and that is why he survived, is that he hid himself well. Tom Donnelly did manage to get out of the house, although he's still handcuffed, but as he ran through the front door, he was stabbed with a pitchfork and then dragged back inside, and he was beaten until he was unconscious and left on the floor. James Donnelly was also, he was beaten to death. It's believed he died before they lit the fire. Bridget Donnelly was hiding upstairs, but people had seen her run upstairs, so several of the vigilantes followed her, and quite soon after they came back down and said, "We took care of her." So it's believed she was also beaten to death. And Joanna Donnelly was also beaten. She wasn't killed from, neither she nor Tom were killed from the beatings, but as the vigilantes left, they poured oil and kerosene over everything and lit the house on fire. Young Johnny O'Connor was still underneath the bed. He stayed under as long as he could until the fire was too great for him. He climbed out. He tried to put the fire out, but he wasn't able to, and he ran out the back door. As he ran out, he stepped on Joanna Donnelly by accident, and she moaned, so they know she was still alive at the time. And he ran to the neighbors to get help. And by the time the neighbors got there, it was too late. They weren't able to put the fire out until the next afternoon. It was so strong that it melted the snow in about 10 feet around where the house had been. Meanwhile, after leaving the Donnelly's farm, a group of the vigilantes continued on to William Donnelly's house up in Wayland's Corner. Now, William was staying there. He's married, so he and his wife were in one bed. His brother John was also staying the night, and a friend of theirs had come by that night, and they told him to stay the night. So the vigilantes get to William's house and decide that to get him out, they would beat his horse. When William heard the animal in distress, he would come out, and then they would deal with him. But that didn't work. They didn't wake them up. So they left the horse, began banging on the doors, yelling, "Will, there's a fire. You have to come out." So John Donnelly was the first one to get up, and he opened the door. And as he did, he was shot. And he fell back inside and yelled out to his brother, "Will, I've been shot," and he died a few minutes later. And while this was going on, William Donnelly looked out the window, and he saw the brother of his wife was one of the men there that had come to kill him. Now, there were plenty of witnesses from William Donnelly and the people who were in his house and Johnny O'Connor, but no one was ever charged for the murders. They were all acquitted.
Amazing story. So all told, in the space of an hour or two in one night, five members of the Donnelly family were murdered in cold blood. And as you said, despite the fact that there were trials, no one was ever actually convicted of the crimes. And before the Donnellys, though, another big part of Lucan's history that people aren't aware of was the Wilberforce Settlement, which was a settlement of escaped black slaves. What can you tell the listeners about the Wilberforce Settlement?
Well, Wilberforce was here in about 1829, and they were slaves that came from Cincinnati, Ohio, because they didn't want to pay the $500 fee per person to stay in Ohio. So they all came here, and there was probably about 200 of them at one time, and they lived here and worked the fields, and the majority of them didn't like farming, though, so they did end up going back to the city. Some went to Chatham, some went to Aylmer, and some went back to Detroit.
And then, I guess obviously that helped because they would have done a lot of the land clearing, that sort of thing, working the fields. And then there was a huge influx of Irish immigration to Canada and the U.S. throughout the 1830s, 40s, 50s, and with that came the Donnellys. Now, as I mentioned, you're the current president of Lucan Area Heritage and the Donnelly Museum. What can you tell folks about Lucan Area Heritage, sort of a brief overview of what you guys are all about?
Well, there's probably 25 of us. The majority have lived in Lucan all of their life. I'm a transplant from Montreal. Been here quite a few years now. All of the members are very much into history. We do a lot of fundraising. We have an auction. We have a heritage dinner. We have a ladies' day. We have a Christmas home tour. We do tours of our buildings. We do the tour. We do a tour of where the fellas went on the massacre, where they left and where they went. We do that upon request. Most of the people in Heritage are very much involved with keeping the past alive for the younger generation.
Fantastic, too. And like I say, it's a very historically rich region. People don't really understand, I think, until they come to Lucan and see things. We're sitting now inside a cabin that, as far as I understand, is pretty much what the Donnelly homestead would have looked like at the time of the murders in 1880.
Yes, that's correct. We've tried to make it as authentic as possible from the information that we've gathered from books that we've read and people that have had relatives at that time that have passed down the information.
Yeah, and it really is. I have to say firsthand, I can tell the listeners, it's a very surreal experience when you walk into this cabin. It's very small, it seems very cramped quarters, but at the same time, it's of the period, which does make it, very authentic. You look at the beds and you think, myself standing 6 feet even, I would probably have my ankles hanging over the end of the bed, but and width-wise, it wouldn't accommodate more than one person. But it's interesting to see how a family of, five, six, seven, eight people could live in a house so small.
Yeah, it's not very comfortable to sleep on the beds, but I guess when you have a big family, you're used to having people underfoot all the time, and I guess most of them were out working in the field, so they were only in at night, so I guess they weren't really bumping into each other.
This is true. I suppose when you're working 10 or 12-hour days in the fields, you kind of come home to eat and pass out. That's pretty much it. Now, you've been involved with the Lucan Area Heritage and Donnelly Museum for how long yourself?
I'm going to say probably about 6 years. I'm one of the newer people involved, but history was one of the things that I liked in school, so that was kind of what drew me to it. And a lot of the people that are in it are friends that, we sort of chum around together, so it's kind of a fun thing to do.
Absolutely. Now, the big project right now, from my understanding, is, of course, the building of the Donnelly Museum. And could you just tell the listeners, as far as, physically speaking, what the building itself will look like or what the aim is, what sort of efforts you guys are doing as far as, keeping things authentic, all that sort of thing?
The building is going to be on the main street. It's going to be facing the main street. It will look very similar to what the old Grand Central Hotel would look like. It will be one floor. We will have a separate little area for the curator so that there's a little work area there. Most of the flooring will be just a large room with partitions with different specialty things. We'll have a display of obviously of the Donnellys. We'll have one of Wilberforce. We'll probably have one of the hockey and the baseball and different things like that in there. There will be a little mezzanine around the top that will have other displays of different artifacts that we have in our little museum that we can now display to better advantage.
So it's certainly not, it is a Donnelly Museum, but not devoted solely to the Donnellys.
Not devoted solely to the Donnellys. That will be a big part of it. But Lucan also has other history that we want to make sure it's preserved as well.
Absolutely. And again, it's, you know, for those that are listening, it's, you know, all of about a 15-minute drive due north of London. Very historic area and very worthwhile as far as the trip goes. So, Mark, the Donnelly Museum and Lucan Area Museum, it's who is the builder right now and how's the project coming along to date?
The builder we have is K&L Construction. Our architects are Spreet and Associate. We have the foundation dug out, and we have some of the boarding that they put around the bottom done, so it's starting to actually happen. So this is a good thing. We've been working on this for 6 years, trying to raise enough money to do this. We still are looking for other donations if anybody's interested. We can always use that type of thing for dressing the inside. We're going to have a wall of fame for some of the people that have donated. We'll have a wall for different increments of money shown as you walk in the entranceway so that we can recognize all the great support that we've had from people in Lucan and from people outside.
Absolutely. And now, if people are interested in making a donation, how is the best way to go about that?
The best way to go about that is to call Sheila Hodgins at 519-227-1812.
Now, the museum itself, do you guys have a scheduled completion date in mind, or what a target date, I guess you could say?
Our target date to be actually ready to move things in, we were hoping, is September. I'm not sure when the actual construction would be finished. Our project manager is Dave Goddard. He probably has more information on that. We're hoping September that we can start moving our artifacts in, and we will have a grand opening in the spring of 2009.
Well, ladies, thank you very much for both of you giving your information. I greatly appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
Folks, we are all done for another episode of Full Frontal right here on CHRW 94.9 FM. Until next time, if you have any questions for myself or the show, feel free to email me at august@chrwradio.com or visit my official website at www.augustdonnelly.com. Remember, we're here every other Monday night at 7:30 p.m. Until then, I'm August Donnelly, and you're not.